Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. My name is David Law from BBC Radio 5 Live. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker of Eurosport on a momentous day for the Tennis Podcast. This is episode number 250. We've had our 2 millionth download. I mean, really, surely people have got better things to do than listen to this. Apparently not, which we're grateful for. So thank you, everybody, for listening over the last 4.5 years. But Catherine Whittaker and I, the reason I'm speaking a little bit quieter than maybe perhaps I normally would is we've just seen both of the men's singles semi-finals, in which Gael Monfils has been defeated by Novak Djokovic, and Stan Wawrinka has just won through in four sets over Kei Nishikori, and they were dragging themselves around the court, struggling for breath at times, and the reason for that is the humidity. We're sitting outside right now, Catherine, just outside the media centre. It is deeply unpleasant sitting out here. I mean, the temperature itself is quite nice. It's warm compared to the ice box of a commentary box I've just been sitting in. You're rolling your eyes because you've been out here for about 6 hours. But in terms of the humidity, just try to explain what it's like.
Well, it's an incredibly tough task you've just set me, because it's very, very difficult to put into words. As English people, we're not really allowed to complain about heat or summery weather conditions. But I'm going to, because this is quite something. It's very, very difficult to capture if you're not actually in it. I mean, I was standing outside for 20 minutes earlier at 3 o'clock waiting to be queued for a live link on Eurosport, and I had to run to the loo, where I knew there was a big fan, to stand in front of it for a few minutes just to gather myself. I mean, it's that bad, really. It's and as soon as you get in some air conditioning, you think, oh, it can't be that bad, can it? I must have just been being a wimp. And then when you get back out, and it's like, it's just so difficult to capture unless you're actually in it. But it is stifling. It's like claustrophobia. It's not heat, it's not humidity. Those words don't capture it. It is claustrophobia.
Yeah, because I've just come out here and I've spent such a long time in air conditioning that you don't really appreciate it. Trying to breathe in right now, it feels like you kind of can't really fill your lungs properly with oxygen. It's a very strange sensation. Imagine trying to run around in this. I really sympathise with these players, because I think that unless you're... I think the fans sitting in the stadium would perhaps appreciate that to some degree, because at least they're breathing the same air. If you're watching on TV, you wouldn't know. I mean, that those four players looked like they were suffering out there tonight, and I'm not surprised that ultimately it's Stan Wawrinka and Novak Djokovic that come through, because aerobically they're probably the fittest and they're the strongest, the most resilient. And it really is survival of the fittest.
Absolutely. I mean, I tweeted it earlier sort of as a joke, but just to really emphasise the point. I mean, the place that I've been going for dinner every evening, it's called Wine Bar Food, the imaginatively named Wine Bar Food. They shut down early tonight. The kitchen staff walked out because it was too hot for them to work.
What did you end up having?
You don't want to know. You don't
no, I do want to know. Hamburg.
Tennis podcast listeners don't want to know what I end up having for dinner.
What a disappointment, eh? Sorry, folks, I tried.
Anyway, I physically couldn't. I was trying to imagine what it'd be like to try and play tennis in it, and I just ended up sort of aborting the thought because it's so dreadful.
Should we go and have a game? I tell you, there's a court out there at the moment. Nobody's on it. They've just finished the semi-final. We could go and use that one.
On a serious note, it's interesting. Pat Cash was doing our sort of courtside. We had our commentators up in the booth, and Pat Cash was doing the courtside commentary thing. He looked like he'd jumped in a pool by the end of the first set. And I sent him a text saying, "Are you okay?" And he said, "Yeah, I'm fine." He did not look fine. But he's hardier than I am, let's put it that way. But he said, going into the match, he was commenting on the conditions, and he said he thought Wawrinka would struggle more. He said some very interesting stuff about muscle mass, and he said Wawrinka's a lot more muscly, less lean of a player, and musclier players tend to cope less well. He talked about all sorts of physiology that I can't now re-quote because it was more technical than I'm au fait with. But really interesting stuff about musclier players dealing less well with these sorts of energy, moisture-sapping conditions. But he's such a silently fit player, Wawrinka, isn't he? That's not quite the right way of putting it somehow. He's understatedly so fit and athletic. He's a completely different body type to Djokovic. He's a completely different body type to Murray, and Murray and Djokovic are a completely different body type. He's deceptively, incredibly fit.
He is. He's got stamina, endurance. He doesn't wear out. You know, it's just like the battery is just one of those long life specials.
I was pretty neutral going into that match. You know, I just wanted the best man to win, but as somebody who just wants to see a competitive final, who wants to see any tournament go out on a high, as the match wore on, I started to think, I want Wawrinka to win this because he's the far more likely to pull up well for the final. I just trust his stamina, his recovery, a lot better than I do Nishikori. And that's not a slight on Nishikori, because I'm not sure many players, even the fittest players, would pull up well from a 4 or 5 set match in these conditions. But I trust Wawrinka's ability to more than I would most.
And it's a bit of a shame, isn't it, really? Because Nishikori, shot making wise, was able to go toe to toe with Stan and for a set and a half be the better player. I mean, it's so exciting to watch Stan teeing off on ground strokes and Nishikori dealing with them, you know, with his sort of stand in and play pinball tennis. I mean, I love watching that, and he actually prevailed against him 2 years ago in 5 sets. But I think these conditions allied to the big 5-set match with Murray. But I mean, he played numerous 5-set matches in a row 2 years ago. I do think these conditions were a major factor in that result tonight.
Well, one of the changeovers, I think, during the second set, the umpire scolded Wawrinka for generally both of them, I think, taking too long between points, and he just looked blankly and said, "Come on, use some common sense. We're both dying here. Look at these conditions. We're both dying," and that just said it all. I mean, I completely agree with him. You know, common sense had to be applied there. Those were, and these are, just to podcast in, some quite extraordinary conditions.
They are. We want your sympathy, listeners. We want you to understand what we're doing in the name of this show. Is we're sitting outside on a chair in the nice warm weather talking about tennis and complaining. That's what we do here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. However, the match we haven't touched on yet is the one that caused a heck of a lot of discussion, the one between Gael Monfils of France and Novak Djokovic, which I really don't know how to sum it up. I mean, here's the gist of it. Gael Monfils hasn't been in a Grand Slam semi-final for 8 years. He came out and he was down 5-love after 16 minutes, and to all the world it looked as though He'd frozen on the spot, as though his senses and the magnitude of the moment had completely frozen, and he couldn't cope, and he couldn't get any feel on the racket. And so he started to try to do what I thought were silly things of looking like he wasn't trying, and hitting chip and charge sabers, and you know, ridiculous serves and volleys and so forth, and he ended up winning three games in a row to get back to 5-3. He almost got to 5-4. He ended up losing that first set. Then the second set, he started getting booed when he lost it 6-2, because again, I mean, he was missing such a lot, but he was also, with his body language at least, it looked as though he was just throwing it in a bit and not really racing to every ball and so forth. Then in the third set, he got energised, or he seemed to get energised, and he started to play more like the Gael Monfils, I think, that we expected to see, certainly. He won it, and then in the fourth set, Djokovic prevailed. Now, throughout all of this, by and large, I think Djokovic played a good match. It wasn't a great match he played, but it was a good match, and he won in sort of the scoreline I probably would have expected him to win in any way. But the way it went, I mean, while I was commentating on it, to me it was just plain weird. I didn't understand what was going on. And John McEnroe, I know, and many other members of the ESPN watching commentary team were also quite critical of Gael Monfils' body language and in their words, professionalism. Now, he came into the press conference afterwards and that was put to him, and he was absolutely emphatic that he was giving 100% out there, that he was trying something different. Effectively, what I think he was trying to do were the rope-a-dope tactics of Muhammad Ali against George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle, of leaning against the ropes, letting the guy hit him, but whilst blocking and trying to just get in his head, and then coming out and striking with a surprise attack. And bear in mind that Novak Djokovic had won 12 out of 12 of their previous encounters. It appears to be that Monfils didn't think he could win with his normal game, so he tried something different. That's what he was saying, at least. But it was a very strange experience to witness it.
As strange a match as I've ever witnessed on a tennis court. That's not to say it wasn't exciting at periods and certainly engrossing, but very, very odd. And as much as Monfils' press conference was fantastic and a completely, explicit explanation of what he feels he was doing out there, it still is strange. I mean, his explanation was of that behaviour, the rope-a-dope stuff, was I resorted to plan B. But he says, I resorted to plan B after 10 minutes. I mean, if you're resorting to plan B after 10 minutes, you don't deep down believe in plan A, do you? And if you're getting one fee...
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As talented as he is, hasn't dropped a set so far. If you can't believe in your plan A, even if you have got a 12-0 record, I mean, you've got to believe in your plan A at least for a set or two, and then start resorting. I think that was what was extraordinary. People saying, I mean, he had 15-30 in that opening service game. It looked to be going brilliantly, and then two double faults, he's conceded the game, and it looked to me like he panicked and gone, oh, what's plan B? That was what was unbelievable. Not that he had a plan B, not that his plan B was something unusual. I mean, who can knock that? Trying something different against the best player in the world in extreme circumstances. That's just fine. It was how early he panicked, I think.
Especially given plan A has got him to the US Open semi-finals and the best results of his career consistently all year long. I think ultimately I take his explanation on its merits, and it at least provides me, as somebody who was looking on, scratching my head, trying to work out what on earth he was doing with himself, it provides some degree of comfort that there was some thought going into this, even though I think he got it completely wrong. I think he just made the wrong decisions. I think he did panic a bit. I think he threw in these tactics, and the problem with those tactics are, as Nick Kyrgios finds when he starts going walkabout and looking disinterested, if you're going to do that, you'd better win. Because people are not forgiving if they don't see you jumping up and down and running down every ball. They're just not.
Well, for me, it was a classic example of a one-sided head-to-head being too much of a feature in the match. He needed to be able to say, I might have lost 12 times out of 12 to Novak Djokovic, but that was a different game on feast. And to be honest, that's what a lot of experts that I spoke to before that match were saying, that not that the head-to-head is insignificant, but that Monfils really shouldn't be looking a lot into it, because this is a different game, Monfils. And I watched that match they played in the semi-final of Toronto, and Monfils played well enough to win. The scoreline might not suggest that. He just didn't win the key points because, for me, he didn't believe. And he should have learned from that, and he seemingly didn't. That head-to-head going into it seemed to be the defining feature for me. I mean, other defining features were obviously that Djokovic is more of a mental iron man than anybody else on the tour. I spoke to Boris Becker briefly after that match, more for a look ahead to the final, but obviously he touched upon that semi-final, and without me even needing to bring it up, he mentioned the conditions, and he said he thought Djokovic and Monfils were two of the three or four fittest players on the tour, and he said they were dying after a set. He could tell, even before we could tell, I think, that Novak was really, really struggling out there.
And who wouldn't? I mean, it was, we've said it already, I don't really remember conditions quite as oppressive as this.
I certainly don't. You've been here more times than I have, but this is unlike anything
I've ever
experienced. I think there was
1 year in the first week when we had it a few days. But, I mean, for a finals weekend, I think that's what I read somebody say today, is they don't remember a finals weekend or last 3 or 4 days that are quite like this. So hopefully we get some monstrous thunderstorm tonight.
I think he deserves more credit for, because looking back more on what happened to Murray against Nishikori, for me, I think he was too obsessed with not wanting to expend unnecessary energy, too obsessed with what happened in Paris, and thinking, rather than just let's get the job done any which way, I want to get the job done in three sets or at absolute worst four, and then really panicking and beating himself up for letting himself be taken to a fifth and thinking, oh goodness me, I can't afford to be expending this amount of energy at this stage of the tournament. I don't want to be going into the final with that many miles on the clock. And Djokovic kept his cool about that today. I mean, I know it's easier to, when you've only had 6 hours, 26 minutes on the clock, I guess, cumulatively, he's in a far better position than most people could ever be at this stage. But still, the fact that Murray succumbed to that with his experience and greatness and all of that shows that it shouldn't be taken for granted, I think.
One thing I did notice when the players came out onto the court was how warm the reception was for Djokovic compared to Monfils. It was polite for Monfils, but it was one of I don't think that they're not that familiar with him yet, and so forth. I feel as though just incrementally now people are getting used to Djokovic, world number one. Particularly at this tournament, he's been to, I think it's his seventh final at the US Open now. And, that's what happens, isn't it? I think as players start to make a real impact and are seen as the best player in the world, they start to get appreciated for that as time goes by. As Stan Wawrinka is walking past us. Oh, yeah. Yeah, somebody shouting, Stan the man. There are lots of little fans sort of waiting here by the steps as Stan Wawrinka goes from ESPN television studio in towards the press conference, and he'll do about 32 interviews in all sorts of different languages, and then he might finally get home for the night. He spent 17 hours on the court. Djokovic has spent 8. It's a big difference, isn't it? It's something that, you know, I wonder how big a factor that might be.
What would you be thinking right now if you were Dan Evans? What would you be?
I did say that in commentary. I said, spare a thought for a Villa Sporting Brummie right now.
The would-be US Open finalist, Dan Evans. I mean, seriously, I mean, I'm not saying had he taken that match point, he would be going into US Open final now. I'm not saying that. But still, you can understand Dan Evans having those sorts of thoughts, couldn't you? I mean, why? I mean, if you, of course, Dan Evans is having those thoughts, and I would be too. It's just it's peaking at the right time. Is everything, isn't it? And even both within a tournament and within a match, he's a slow starter, Stan Wawrinka. Best of five really favours him. You know, there were so many best of five sets versus best of three sets debates raging on Twitter during both the matches today, and I think podcast listeners know where we both stand on that, so we won't get into it.
There's Michael Chang. Look, he's just wandering off with his food to go and give to Kenny Shikori.
Because he stood me up for an interview a couple of days ago, so...
Oh, okay.
Maybe it's just karma.
Magnus Norman didn't then, I suppose.
No, it's karma. It's what it is.
All right. So that's what it comes down to. So that's how insular we are on the Tennis Podcast. If you do an interview with us, we want you to win.
What was I saying? Yeah, I mean, the best of five versus best of three, you know where we stand on that, so we won't get into it. But I can't remember why I got into best of five versus best of three.
Well, just about the sheer length of matches and the number of hours on court that Stan Wawrinka has played, because obviously Djokovic's matches have all been curtailed.
No, I mean, I was talking about what a slow starter is. I mean, there's no doubt the best of five favours Stan Wawrinka. Look at his, you know, Grand Slam record versus Masters Series record versus any other record. I mean, there's no doubt it favours him. And
I don't think it's going to hurt him, you know, this.
No.
I don't think the fact that he's actually spent 9 hours more than Djokovic will actually come into this match.
I don't either, and that sort of fitness should be rewarded. That should be, you know, that added dimension to tennis. That's a great thing. That added dimension of test to it, just it makes tennis greater, doesn't it?
It's certainly a factor, isn't it? It's certainly a factor you wouldn't want to remove from tennis, because otherwise it would just be, you know, a shot making contest. And I think at slams it needs to be more than that. So, you know, we'll have to see. I mean, I do think there is, as we've talked about, there is an argument for shortening matches earlier in some of these tournaments. But, you know, I think you do away with the five-set formats at your peril. Anyway, Catherine, what time we got to? We've got to go and get the bus again. And, I don't want to go racing off and you colliding with trees and stuff again. So I think we might as well wrap it up here. We are going to try and do a Periscope session at some point, but tomorrow, now that Jamie Murray's in the final, looks to have scuppered that for tomorrow on Saturday. So we'll have to find another time, won't we?
It does. I think I'm presenting coverage of that for Eurosport from 10 to 12 local time, which is 10 to 5 UK time, and you're doing
talking very quickly on radio about it.
About four people, Garcia Lopez.
And oh, is it really? Is it double-barreled names?
It's
oh, brilliant.
Two double-barreled names. Good luck, David. Good luck.
Anybody got any shorthand for it? Is it Quina Buster or something like that, and Garcia Lopez against Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez. Okay, answers on a postcard of how I can shorthand the opponents' names for Jamie Murray and Bruno Suarez to try to get them into a radio commentary, because I have to speak really quickly like this. Catherine, that's about it for the Tennis Podcast for today. Who's going to win the women's final? Pliskova against Kerber. That's a good one, isn't it? I asked Jill Craybas that on Five Live Sports Extra, and she was scratching her head. I was scratching my head. What do you think?
I mean, I'm going to do the same as I did against for Pliskova Serena and go with the odds. I'm going to go for Kerber, but Pliskova's got a real chance for sure. She's got a real chance.
Yeah, she beat her in Cincinnati and she beat her handily. I think Kerber was short on resources on that one after all the finals she'd been to, but I'd go with Kerber too. I just think this is a woman that has done the groundwork and she has such self-conviction. I also think there has to be a chance that Pliskova blinks a little bit in the final. I know she's played Venus and Serena on that court, but her first Grand Slam final, I know that Kerber did it in her first Grand Slam final, and it could go either way. But that's always likely to be a factor that I don't think it would be for Kerber, who's in her third one of the year. I mean, she deserves that ranking.
absolutely. I mean, if Serena had had the year that Kerber has had, you know, even without her winning tomorrow, if she goes on to win tomorrow, then even more so, then we'd all be saying, oh my goodness me, the most extraordinary. I mean, it's quite something. She deserves it. She is the best player in the world. She is.
Right now, absolutely, unquestionably. That is the way it is. And we look forward to reconvening tomorrow night, Catherine, for our 251st episode. And maybe we'll have a few more listeners than our 2 million downloads that we've had so far. So thanks ever so much again. Really, we mean it. Catherine's laughing.
Oh, you know, there might be some members of the Whittaker family that haven't yet been persuaded to tune in.
Yeah, Catherine has the biggest extended family, which is why we've got all these listeners. That's not true. But anyway, thanks ever so much for listening. We do appreciate it. And we'll speak to you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.